All right, my name is Laura Williams, and I am here at Wayne State University interviewing Mary Ramirez at the Kresge Library on campus. Today's date is November 28th, 2018. This recording is part of the Ruther Library Detroit Music History 2018 Oral History Project. I'm a student at Wayne State performing this interview for the oral history course. Mary, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
So can you tell me a little bit about where you grew up?
I'm what they call an Army brat. I grew up in the Army, and so I was born in Panama. There's a canal there, and so that's kind of like the Army part of Panama, which is really weird because they evacuated the soldiers, but it's still just a weird whole thing. But anyway, I went from there to, went to the States. Then I went to, we were supposed to go to Hawaii, but my parents were late. So they got, in the Army, you're not late. So then we got sent to Germany. I could have grown up in Hawaii, but instead I grew up in Germany. Then we came back to the States. I think we might have went back to Germany, went back to the States. I think that was when I had enough and I ran away from home.
You did?
Yes, and I ran away to Detroit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why Detroit?
Basically because I knew someone here. There was a lady, an older lady. I was like 13, and things were kind of crazy at home. So I said, can I come to Detroit? She goes, if you can find your way, go ahead. And I did, and I never went back.
Wow.
And not till way later as an adult, when I made peace with myself about not being angry, when I became an adult.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you've been living here in Detroit since you were 13?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely going to touch back on that, but I'll ask a little more about your growing up, and then we'll move on. So you mentioned that you were an Army brat, and you kind of went from school to school when we talked over the phone before. What was school like for you as a child? Were you involved in activities?
No, because when you go from school to school, you don't have friends, so you learn to acclimate really quickly. But you don't really ever fit in, So yes, for a period of time, I was hanging out with the weirdest kids in school. The one who was playing Russian roulette with himself.
Boy.
Yeah, like what? Kids that say weird things. You do what you got to do when you're in school,
Yeah.
There's no responsibility for any of your actions either, there's no punishment for anything you do wrong because you're in school for 2 years and then you move on. I mean, sometimes you stay someplace for 3 years, but for the most part, it was like 2 years, two to 3 years. Yeah. So, yeah, and I never once when I was playing somewhere, I don't know if it was like St. Louis or somewhere, I ran into somebody that knew me in school. And that was bizarre because I've never ran into anybody I've known in school because we've all moved around so much. And somebody goes, did you go to, blah, blah, blah schools? And I'm like, yes. And they go, but, it's not like, hey, what's up? You just know that you went to the same school.
Wow.
But at the same time. But, yeah, I've never met anybody that I went to school with that I remember.
Yeah, so it was very kind of sporadic, it sounds.
Very, very. You moved a lot. You were always the Army kids, You didn't go to Army schools. You went to, schools that were, near the base. And you always were known as the base kid, the kids that left came from the base or whatever. And, blah, 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 blah. You learn to immediately embrace the bad kids. Because the bad kids don't care who you are, The bad kids like, hey, come on, let's party, Yeah.
Okay. And was music a big part of your life as a child growing up?
No. I mean, nobody in my family plays an instrument. My mother's very musical, very artistic. But, nothing was encouraged, per se. One time I did ask, could I take piano lessons? My mother said no, because it's like in the Army, everything's really weird in the Army. In the Army, In the Army, you got to get permission to do everything. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know how it's now, but that's the way it was, you know. And at 6 o'clock, they had to do whatever, the reveille, the taps, whatever, you know. That, and everybody would run. I mean, no matter where you were at, you had to stop and put your hand over your heart. So, like, at 5:58, everybody was just running. I mean, literally running to get inside anywhere, you know. But if you went to the movies, you had to, you know, stand, you know, put your hand over your, you know. If you, you know, but yeah, if you're driving and that thing started, you got to stop your car, get out of your car, and put your hand over your heart. That's what life in the Army is like when you're like, non-personnel, you know. So you were kind of wild, you know. In true respect, you were wild. So you ran around with wild children. You know,
in like a rebellious way.
Yeah, in the silliest way too. Like at one point when you're living in the base, they have, you know, the a lot of the Army guys are 18, 19, 20. Technically, they're not allowed to drink, but yeah. You know, but you got them in the Army, you're gonna go kill. So they provide this beer called 3-2-1 beer, and you know, and our biggest thing was to like, they were in vending machines. And you just like a bunch of you got together and you like, okay, and you, one of you ran over there and put as many coins as you could and hit and grab this beer, which by the way has to be the lightest beer you could ever drink, you know, lighter than Coors Light, you know. And we're there trying to get drunk off one can of beer that we managed to run and get, you know. But that's, you know, that's basically, I mean, this, when you're part of the Army and it goes into school, it's all becomes one. So, mm-hmm. So like, I remember one time we were all fighting. There was too many fighting in school. There was, like, so much fighting in school, you know, like, all the, they'd send letters home saying everybody's got to start fighting. And the Army sent a letter to all the Army parents and said, if your child gets caught fighting, you will stripe your rank. See, wow. That's the power of the Army versus the civilian life, you know? And that's a whole nother. imagine you saying, you're telling your parents, like, you know, if your kid gets caught fighting again, we're gonna like cut your wages.
You know? I cannot imagine.
Yeah, we're gonna, you know, you're making what, 25? You're gonna make 18 now.
Wow. Like,
you know, and
a lot of pressure.
A lot of beating. A lot of pressure. A lot of running. A lot of jumping. But you know, so eventually I left this wonderful life and ran away to Detroit.
Wow.
Not that it was horrible, it's just, it's the Army.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How would you describe your parents?
My dad was a career Army guy. And my mom was a woman that was very highly educated, but when she married an Army guy and became into the States, they didn't recognize her education.
Where was she from?
Costa Rica.
Okay.
They didn't recognize her education, so they, you know, it dampened her, you know, but you know, she loved bingo.
Sound fun.
Yeah, kind of stuff. You know, they weren't heavy drinkers, heavy smokers.
Okay.
You know, liked dancing a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice. And where was your dad born?
In where was he born? South Carolina, maybe.
Okay.
I cannot believe I do not know that.
Okay. All right. That's okay. All right. So, who were your childhood heroes?
God. Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee.
Because he, you know, he was like really cool, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Definitely comedians, you
okay.
know. Yeah, but not. You know, I don't know. I don't know if I had too many childhood heroes. You know. You know. I mean, music. I like music, but I don't know if they were heroes to me. You know.
And what kind of music did you like growing up?
When I was growing up, my mother, who is a white-looking lady. did not like white people's music, as she called it, and she was very, very much into like soul, R&B, But she didn't like Motown. She was particularly about the labels. She only liked Atlantic, and she liked what was the one with the Stax, you know. So all the records I knew were soul, kind of underground soul. Not that she was a collector or nothing. She just what she liked, you know. And she didn't. I remember sneaking in, like, you know, rock records into the house. And then, and I remember just trying to find a song that I could like relate to her with her. Like, and I found like, okay, what song was she like? And I went and got the Beatles, "Oh Darling," because that sounded kind of soulful. And she just looked at me like, get this out of my house.
Really?
Yeah, like get this out of my house. You know, So when I went to Detroit, I learned rock and roll all at once. All at once. I remember like hearing like Bob Seger in school, like in, you know, one of the many fucking places I was at. But I didn't like it, you know, where now I love Bob Seger.
Okay.
But I didn't like the radio at all, and when I came to Detroit, through all the people I met, they basically taught me rock and roll. And which I was like, wow. You know, I mean, to learn the Beatles and the Kings and the Stones and all at once, you know, when somebody's going like, oh, here are five cool groups you might like, and you're like, wow, you know, and you know, so it was a lot to take in, but soul music was like my first love.
Soul music?
Yeah, I mean, because my mother had it, you know, and I, you know, and you know, and you know, stuff like that, you know, yeah, like Aretha was huge in our house. Huge. Okay. I mean, like, you know, but no Motown. My mother thought Motown was a little too white. She goes, my mother's pretty white, okay? My mother's like blonde, pretty white looking lady. Yeah, but she didn't like, yeah, she thought, which I think is funny, because I think she's right. She was right. I know what she was saying. It's not white. She's saying it's like kind of, you know, poppy, you know,
sure.
You know, where Aretha's like soul, you know? So. Yeah, I understood what she was saying.
So, who is it that you came here? Who was your contact here? You said
there was a lady. I called her my grandmother, and she was my dad was he was a now I know why I don't know where he was born. he was a guy that was found on the doorstep.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he had like a name tag.
Wow.
What his name was, and then the lady found him. And then she kept him, and then the lady that found him, when the mother won her back, she said no, and she sent him to this lady in Detroit.
Wow.
And this lady in Detroit. So this lady in Detroit, I had met her before, and I wrote to her, and she said, yeah, you can come up here.
So she knew your family?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And who was it that was introducing you to all this new music when you got here?
You mean name-wise? There was Jim Shaw and Steve Shaw were like, you know, really big instrumental in teaching me. But there was also Bootsy, Robert Maroney, they call him Bootsy. You know, it was just a bunch of people all introducing me to music at the same time. I met Rob Tyner when I was pretty young, and that's the lady who lives across the street from me. When you were young, at least what I was always hungry. And they used to have the Unitarian Church or one of those like around here. Mm-hmm. They would have these concerts, and I stumbled into one of them one day, and I was really hungry, and they were making food, and I'm like, how can I get some food? And they go, if you perform, and they handed me a tambourine, and I'm like, hey. She goes, okay, now you can eat. She was just playing with me, but she was saying like, you know, just be part of the community. And that's how I got to know them, but I mean, just people in general. Everybody, people are pretty nice in general.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you're not an asshole, people are pretty nice to you.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean? If you've been taught right by your parents, you know, to behave properly, then you're
a decent human.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, how did you start playing music?
There was a kid across the street who was really cute, and he wanted a guitar for Christmas, so therefore I wanted a guitar for Christmas. I did not know how to play. I did not matter. I didn't know you needed an amp. And then when I got the guitar, but at this point I was living in Monterey, California, and Monterey, it's like there's like a bunch of little places, and there was a place called the Dream Theater, and it was where all the kids, all the teenagers would go, because they were like, instead of like regular chairs, they were like long chairs you could lay down in,
oh,
like this.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And all the kids would go there, like all the teenagers would go there to make out. I wasn't a teenager, but my dad would allow me to go there, and he'll drop me up and pick me up, which is actually really cool of him. He would like take me there, and it was like on Saturday, and everybody around me would be making out, not I, but I saw the Jimi Hendrix Story, and I was like totally blown away by it, and I went for Christmas. I wanted a guitar anyway, because I knew the cute kid across the street wanted one. But I want this one in particular. And when I went to the guitar store, the little asshole, the guitar shop asshole, and there's such a song, he says, well, she doesn't know how to play guitar. She doesn't need that one. We have a starter kit with this guitar that comes with, you little bastard, you know? it's just like, but needless to say, it's a guitar that many people I know have had. So that's how I started. So I got the guitar on Christmas Day. I walked in front of his house back and forth.
Really? The guitar?
We got the guitar. He never noticed. I was like, none of that ever works.
So funny.
You know, none of that ever works, you know? Oh, she's got a guitar. Wow, she's a cool girl. No, that didn't happen at all.
How old were you at the time?
Oh, maybe 11, 12.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So once you got the guitar, how did it develop? How did it go from there?
Well, once I got the guitar and the kid didn't pay no attention to me, it occurred to me that you had to amplify it some way, and I didn't even know how to tune it. So none of this occurred to me when trying to win the admiration of the cute guy across the street. That the only thing that mattered was it was in my hand, and little by little I found out things like you have to tune it, and then you have to like plug it into something, and I don't even ask me how, but I figured out you could plug it into the stereo, and that was my first amp, and from there on, it was just fun stuff, you know, like, you spend a lot of time by yourself,
yeah,
and you know, when you're, and you're preteen, so, oh, I'm playing the guitar, I got a beer, you know, I'm in my room, don't leave me alone, I'm playing my guitar, ding, 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 here.
So, describe the type of music that you play now. And throughout?
Well, throughout I've played, you know, like most people come to music, you start out, well, that's not true. A lot of people are very classified trained, classical trained, but in the garage scene, in the underground belly, in the Detroit vein, most of us start with feelings, you know, like we probably have better ideas than we can actually play. You know, our ideas are stronger than our playing abilities. And that's the nature of most of Detroit rock and roll, I think. You know, it's the idea versus the talent. I mean, at least a lot of the underground music, which I would say that most of us are considered to be underground music, not because we're super super underground, but because it's a DIY kind of thing. And but I believe that that's so. So because it's more an idea than say, let's write down some written copy, it becomes more punk, more attitude than talent. And attitude has always been good, as far as I'm concerned. I'd rather see a band that can't play with good attitude than a band that can play and bores me, you know? So that most of us, I would say 99% of us, of all my friends, mm-hmm. at some point, whether it be a jazz punk, a rock punk, a punk punk, a pop punk, that's where you start. You just start with, you don't even know what you're doing, but you know you want to do it. Why? Because it's just fun, you know? It's just fun. It makes sense to you. And so the music, most of us, you know, there's a lot of punk in it, but because my foundation was in soul, I would say a lot of my music kind of sounds like old R&B, but like the R&B that I like, I mean, you know, like Twist and Shout, you know, You know what I mean? It's a bounce, a hop, you know. But you know, I think all music is good though. I really love it. The thing I love best about music is to go watch it. I love watching music because I am to this day blown away that you can take the same instrumentation, you know, meaning you can take two guitars, a drum, a bass, and a singer, and create endless genres of music.
Yeah.
Endless. I mean, all of them, and what is music but to take your mind off things, you know? So as long as I can sit down and have a beer to you, it might not be the greatest thing, but as long as I'm somewhat entertained, I think it's okay, you know? I don't think you have to sell millions of records. I think you just gotta do something that you're proud of. That's all. And it doesn't matter if nobody hears it. It'll be good. It'll be really good. And funny thing about that is that I'm the person that goes around picking up the things that nobody thought were good and putting it back and giving it right back. You know.
What do you mean by that?
We do a lot of covers that nobody's ever heard.
Okay.
That, I mean, unless we told you there were covers, you would never know.
Because they didn't get it, but
in my opinion, they were good songs. You know, in my opinion, they make sense. You know, and this to me, every band should do covers because if you like a cover, that's a standard. Mm-hmm. If you're, I've seen many bands play, and if their cover is better than any of their originals, then you need to start over again, because. You know, that means that you knew what to do with the cover, but you don't know what to do with yourself. Hmm. You know, that doesn't mean you should stop. I mean, I'm just saying you should just look at your cover and see why you're, you know, when, you know how you can tell? You can tell because you watch them play, and then when it comes to the cover, they just know how to hit. You know, they know how to hit because they know what is behind the song, what is, you know. Yeah. But don't get me wrong. I mean, all songs are good. I mean, I like Weird Al Yankovic. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, when they had these shows that were the food fest, whatever it was, the thing was that they stopped. And when Weird Al played, it was one of the crowdest moments ever. I mean, people were just miles because it was a free show, and people were all over. And it was the kind of people that were there. Everyone, you know, auto worker, you know, it was just a bunch of different kinds of people, you know, and everybody was just singing, you know, go down fat. And, you know, yeah. It was, and he changed the office every single song he changed.
So fun. Was that here in Detroit?
Yeah, it was. What they call it? The shows that they used to have this festival. There was all food, and what was it called? It was one of our favorite festivals, and it was right there by the New Center area, and they would bring in free bands. I mean, you know, but it was a food festival.
Okay.
But the bands they brought in was great, you know, and they brought Weird Al Yankovic, man, and he came in and he came out with the fat suit and you know, and he did the whole thing, and then he did Amish in Paradise, and then he did the Kurt Cobain, and he was all about details. It was the closest thing we came to seeing Kurt Cobain play, you know. Anybody was like, yeah, you know, it was the coolest thing. But
he stole the show.
Oh, it was great. It was great, man. It was great. But I mean, I think all music is good, regardless of what, you know, of what. I don't know if that was even answered your question at all.
It did, and then it got to a bunch of other wonderful places. So did you ever have any, like, mentors or people that helped you develop your music or your genre, or, you know?
That's a good question. One of my first influences was Rob Tyner, who was the singer for the MC5, which is a big band in Detroit. And that was whose wife fed me and said, here's a tambourine. But I was in a band called the Vertical Pillows, and it was all girls. And we were all teenagers. We were all teenage girls. I mean, we went on a little mini tour. We didn't even have to ask. People would just open up their houses. We were like four teenage girls. Hey, how you doing? You know, like full-on teenage girls playing, you know, in a rock and roll band and just having fun. But he was from the MC5, and he was like, you know, you're my little warriors, and, you know, you must, you know, go out there and kick some ass, and, you know, and, yeah, sure, you know. And I didn't even know who the MC5 were, you know. I'm like, yeah, kick some ass, and then, you know, before you record, you cannot play basketball, you cannot be in the back of a bike. I'm like, what? You know, you cannot, you know, I'm like, okay. And, of course, we just nodded our heads. And we went to record the first 45, and oh my God! And the uh, the drummer was driving. He goes, you cannot get it. I mean, all the things he said, we're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And the drummer got it back, was in the back of her bike, and she fell off the bike, and she came and she goes, do not tell him. I'm just a little hurt, you know. Like, it's like, don't worry, I'll play, you know. I'm like, oh my God. But he was probably, he showed me the power of a singer, and that has stuck with me. That has stuck with me for more than anything. Like I've done many different bands. I mean, the Cobras, even within the Cobras, there was another band I did called the Buzzers, and in between that, and the one thing that I've stuck to is that you need a strong singer. You need a strong singer. I personally like a singer that doesn't play an instrument, but if that's not capable, you need one that understands that his job is to sing first and play second, you know, because it's, the singer, it's not an all equal thing when you're playing in a band. It's a hierarchy. The singer comes first, the drummer comes second, the guitars, okay, you got your cute, and the bass player just hold it down, okay? But the singer and the drummer are the two main things, because that's what, you know, when people are watching you play, and that's a big thing. I mean, you go out there to perform, don't forget you're performing. Don't forget it's called the entertainment business. You know, don't get so caught up in being artistic. You know, I mean, if you do, then you should join an artistic thing, like, you know, like such like an orchestra, or, you know, some kind of unit where that matters. But it is, but even in an orchestra, it is called entertainment. Mm-hmm. Even in opera, you know, it's people want to be entertained. They don't want to be listened to. You know, they don't want to be taught that this is a good thing, or this is just like art. You know, but I learned that the singer is super important. They're the ones who are saying, especially in a band, you know, they're the ones who are saying what you're playing around, you know. You're there for a purpose, just one song. Even if it's one song, the song has a singer, the song has a beat, you know, the blah, 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 you know. So when you mix, yeah, anyway, that's my answer. I would say that Rob Tyner was probably pretty instrumental in influencing me on what I think is the most important part of a band, that being the singer. And the song and the singer. You can have a great song with a lousy singer. It don't mean a damn thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you could have a mediocre song with a great singer. You know, that ain't so bad. You know. You know what I mean? You could have a fantastic drummer, great guitar player, but a mediocre singer, doesn't matter. You can have a great singer with a mediocre drummer, and you go, you know what? Sure, I mean, like, who cares, you know, like, you know, so he doesn't play so hot, that's a hot song, good song, you know what I mean? So I learned the power of the singer from Rob Tyner and the MC5, how important, how powerful it is, because mm-hmm. I got to play with him, and it blew my mind. The first time I met him, he was, we had met him, and that's... they were old hippies, and they were supposed to have a meeting, and this other kid said to me, hey, you know that guy Rob Tyner, you know, they have meetings and for the community, and me and him went to the meeting, and nobody showed up. None of the old hippies showed up, none of them. like what happens, you know, it's like all these older people, none of them showed up. And we see this janitor, and it's all around here. This is all around here. Everything I'm telling you happens like right around here. So this janitor, I go where's the meeting, sir? And he goes, I don't know, but here's a phone book. And he uses the phone book, and in the phone book there's Rob Tyner. And we call him up, and we're like, hey, Rob. And he's like, hey, you know, we love you. And, you know, like, actually it was my other guitar player. She was like, I love him. You know, so we got to, so we met him on stage. We met him on stage. We're playing in this little tiny club, and he came in, and there's audio of this. He comes in, and you can hear everybody go, oh, he comes in, and at that point, we were playing on stage, and the singer was going, Mary, we got to turn down. We're all too loud, okay? He got on stage, and he, like, put us in a huddle, and he goes, we're going to do this song, looking at you, that, you know, we knew it. And he's like, you know, and he goes, ready? We're going to kick some ass. And we're like, okay, you know? And he turned around, and he went, oh, you know? And he was so powerful that I turned my guitar on 10, and it was not loud enough.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, wow. Wow. Okay. Wow. All right. And that was it. That was the beginning. That was the beginning of my lessons. I mean, like, wow. You know, like, I saw what that did you know. And then the humor in it all too was because everybody was just going, yeah, and he got back into the huddle again. Mind you, this is a tiny stage. He got back into the huddle again. He goes, let's do it again. I'm going to go, okay. He turned around and goes, we're going to do it again because we don't care. I'm like, that's right, motherfucker, that's right, kick some ass. You know, and I was like, wow. And that was Rock Thunder with the NC5, and I understand now why they're such a great band. Because, I mean, that, and then, you know, to make it into a full circle, mm-hmm. I just got off the road with the MC50. The MC50, because Rob died, the other guitar player died, the bass player died. So Wayne Kramer was an incredible guitar player, he still is. And this was the 50th year of releasing "Kick Out the Jams," which was their song called "Kick Out the Jams, Motherfucker," and it was recorded live at the Grandy Ballroom, which is in Detroit. And it was the 50th year's anniversary of releasing it. And they asked the Detroit Cobras to open up for them, and we were like, "Wow!" I mean, like, okay. I mean, I love the MC50. But my band, like, you know, R&B, you know, thing, and you're like. And they go, no, we think it's going to be great. And I'm like, okay. And it did. It turned out to be great. I mean, but in that band is Wayne Kramer. It's Kim Taiel from Soundgarden. This guy from Zangorilla. This guy from Fugazi. And this guy from Faith No More. You know, it's like my record collection. You know, it's like, okay. Yeah, and I'm playing one record collection, hanging out with them. Hey, what's up, guys? So, but from meeting Rob on stage, you know, little Wario, kick it out, we don't care, kick it out, to... doing it to, you know, the final show was at the Fillmore, and because I know his wife, she gave me a jacket that he was wearing when they recorded the album, and I put it on, and I put on the jacket that Rob Tyner wore, and a full circle. I guess I should die now because the circle has ended.
Wow. Well, I'm glad I'm catching you now.
Yeah, really. Really.
Wow, what an incredible story.
What an incredible like ride that it would turn all into one complete circle like that. And I mean, and it all started because I was hungry.
Right.
The other one was because I was in lust with a young kid across the street from me. Do not let go of your senses. It's the motto of this story.
Right, and do you remember the location you were at when you were on stage and Rob Tyner came in?
Yes, it was called the Hamtramck Pub, and I don't know if you were familiar with Hamtramck.
Not so much.
Okay, so Hamtramck is like Highland Park.
The
Highland
Park city within
it. Yeah, but yeah. But it's not a borough. The reason they're not a borough because Hamtramck and Highland Park are next to each other, so they're cities. Mm-hmm. They're city, because if they were surrounded, it'd be like a borough in New York. But because they touch each other, they're cities inside Detroit. And Hamtramck was a small club owned by these, you know, two crazy gay guys. I swear, gay guys have more to do with everything cool in the world than I can imagine. Seriously, I mean, all the gentrification neighborhoods, they come in first, then the musicians, and then the people with money. You know, they open up the craziest places to go hang out. You know. And but anyway, they had this little club, and it was in Hamtramck. It was on Kniff, and it's no longer there. I don't know what happened, but we also got shot at there too. So that's another story for another day. that's just a regular Detroit story.
So will you tell me about some of the other bands you've been part of?
I played with this band called the Buzzards. There was in the Detroit scene, there were so many bands. Like as we were coming up, as the White Stripes, as the Gorries, as there were just so... Detroit is Detroit, and I don't mean to say this, nothing against anybody else, but Detroit is fortunate enough that we have so many bands, and I don't know why we have so many bands, because, I mean, Detroit is like a pocket city, you know what I mean? Like, there's parts of Detroit that nobody lives at, you know, it's all deserted and blah, 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 and all, you know, the buildings, but in pockets, there's a bunch of people, you know? And in Detroit, at any given time, there is a lot of bands. Even now, there's a lot of bands. I don't know how many now, but there's still quite a bit. But when we're coming up, I mean, there were so many bands that you were literally playing for each other, not for anybody else. Like in other cities, they tend to play with, you know, when a band comes into town, you know, blah, blah. We were playing with each other. We were playing for each other, with each other. We were putting out records and buying each other's records. We're putting out 45s. And due to the scratching business, vinyl never went out of style because they needed to make those records to scratch. And one of the guys who was making vinyl was down in Plymouth, which is not far from here. And he was a crazy old man that did all our records. I mean, he was literally a crazy old man. He was like, hey, and you know, and he some you know, wore like sometimes forgot to put socks on or something. You know, he was just a crazy old dude. And so we got to make 45s cheap, all of us. So all of us had 45s. You know, me on the White Stripes, us. Everybody had 45s. And we loved each other's 45s. I mean, we played for each other, you know, with each other. And Detroit has been like that for as long as I can remember. Even when the MC5, you had Bob Seger, you had Scott and the Rational, you had Grand Funk, you had, you know, I mean, it just doesn't, it, you know, Funk 49, whatever, the Grand Funk, there's just so many bands, you know, there's the whole Motown. You know, like, and there's a part where, like, the Motown bands and the rock and roll bands, you know, combine, and you hear people saying, yeah, at my high school we had, George Clinton, you know, and the MC5 play at our high school. I'm like, oh, we had the Who play at our high school because, you know, there were so many bands coming in and out of Detroit. I mean, nothing has changed about that. And the same thing happened as we were coming up. So when we were coming up, there was a band from Port Huron called the Dirties, and they were like, you know, we love them, man. You know, they only played 15 minutes before they started hitting each other. So we're like, you know, I was like, yay, you know, like just full impact. It was just loved it. I mean, they were just like from beginning to end, it was just like one train coming at you. And it was fun. It was good. It was more rock and roll than that. And they broke up. And the one guy, he came down to Detroit specifically to find me. Mind you, he had no idea where I lived, so he went down to Southwest Detroit, which all the Spanish people live, looking for me. I'm like, why would you do that? You know, why don't you just ask somebody where I live? So anyway, we found each other and we started a band, and we really didn't have a name for it, but he was a guitar player for the Dirties, and we were thinking of names. You know, like, his name was Larry, so we had, like, he goes, how about Lawrence and the Bitches? Because it was all girls and him, and like, yeah, right. And it's like, you know, and we just used to, like, because it was me and these two twins, the friends of mine, women, so it was like, you know, Larry, Mary, and the twins. And we never came up with a name, and he died all of a sudden. Like, he was, like, 26, and he died, and they don't know. They say it was alcohol poisoning, but I think something else was going on, you know. Like he might have, like I think at the time they were like there was some really bad ecstasy going down. But I mean, I never wanted to discuss that in that way because to his mother, that's just her only son, you know. Mm-hmm. So when he died, his singer took over the band, and we became the Buzzards, and we ended up putting out a 45, and so that was a kind of a punk thing, and that was a great singer too. He was kind of a Clash kind of singer. There was Vertical Pillows was my first band, and that was all women, and all of the women. Well, the three of them. It was only four of us. The three of them. They all still play.
Yeah. Yeah. Who are they?
One is Dana Forster, and she plays in a band called Dead in Five. And Paula Messner, she plays. She has like candy bands, like kids bands.
Okay.
You know, and I think she has another band, but she has kid bands for like moms, what they call moms bands, you know, where they play for kids.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, and she was called a candy band. They all call like candy bar names, you know, it's like, you know. But I mean, she was like in the moms band hit pretty big for a while there, and they were like a Good Morning America spent a week at her house. You know?
Really?
Yeah, and she goes, never again. That's like, she goes, like, for a week in your house, you get, like, you know, 5 minutes, you know, of film, you know? And, but, so, I mean, you know, still stay in touch with them. And Dead in Five, you know, she's like one of the, that's like a, you know, like a hardcore band, you know? Like, not hardcore, but, you know, like, hard rock, you know? Like, you know? So, what else? And then there was a brief period where I had a band with an all lesbian band. And then that was really kooky, you know. That was really funny. We played places like there was a place, the place down the street on Cass. I forgot what it's called now, but it used to be called Alvin's. It was a club.
Okay.
And I think now it's an eating place, but it has a great stage. and we went to play a gig there, and it was like 900 women, and I was like, wow, And I thought, well, I guess a bathroom is open. And I walked in, like, and this, well, this, there's perks to this, you know, perks to this. And but you know that they started fighting with each other, and it's like any other band, no different any other band, and that was it. And you know, and even now, I have a project that I want to do, with a bunch of other women, I don't know, you know, kind of that thing where you want to, where you get angry, you know, that they. I don't know, you know, I want to do something else. Don't get me wrong, I love what I do, but mm-hmm. I want to do something else as well. Something where less, you know, where I don't care. People talk about, I don't like tour buses, and I don't like playing stadiums, or, you know, I don't like playing the places of the Fillmore. There seems something to me so impersonal about it. I mean, don't get me wrong, the dressing rooms are better, you know, you get more perks in the fact that nobody's bothering you, you know, you get your own bathrooms, you know, like most you get your own bathroom. I mean, you know, that's like such a delight, you know. But no matter who you are, you can be the opening, everybody gets your own bathroom, you know. It's like, you know, but I like playing smaller places. I mean, St. Andrew's Hall, you know, that's it. Mm-hmm. That's a good sized place to play. But I'd rather be in a club. I'd rather be in a club, and it just makes more sense to me, you know, because it's not about, at the end of the day, what is this all about? You know, I mean, I'm blessed. I'm fortunate that I can make a living, mm-hmm. you know, not a fantastic living, but living the way I like, you know, I live alone. Maybe I shouldn't. I live alone. I mean, I have six cats. I have a car. You know, when I play, like when we were on the road, you know, you're on the road nonstop. You're working 24/7. You know, I mean, I probably go to Europe for 3 weeks. That would be like, you know, in April, I went to play Europe for a weekend. And I played three countries in 3 days. So I left on Thursday and came back on Monday. Never again. That was so strenuous, you know? I mean, it's like, I guess if you have your own airplane, it might be really cool. But to go through the airport and everything of every airport in and out, you know, then you get picked up and you got to play, then you get dressed, you go put your suitcase, put it back into the airplane, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was just, I mean, it was good. It was well paid. But it is intense. But then, you know, you come home and you do nothing. That's not true. But that's why I want another band, to keep myself in my mind. Otherwise, what is that thing? Idle hands, the devil's playground.
Right.
I know they didn't come out of that from nowhere. It's like, holy my God, they're right. You know?
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna touch back on Detroit a little bit. So can you describe Detroit when you first arrived here? What did it look like? What was going on?
Detroit when I first arrived here was pretty much like it was for the following, like maybe 10 years after that. You know what, this Detroit has been pretty messed up for a long, long time. I mean, what, maybe 99, so 2018, 2000, 2001, 2002. I would say up to 2000. I mean, 2004, 2005, Detroit was like our playground. I mean, literally our playground. Nobody was downtown. You did whatever you wanted to do. I mean, you know, I mean, you didn't have to worry about drinking and driving. Not that I'm saying that was a good thing, but it wasn't, as long as you didn't go wild, you didn't have to worry about, you know, I mean, so you could go to bars, you could go to drink, you could go play, you know. You had a lot of freedom, a lot of freedom, a lot of empty spaces. People moved into houses that were really big, so you didn't have to pay, you know, a lot of rent. I mean, that's the beauty of it. But when I first came in, it was probably even a little harder. And then it got you know, blah, 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 because I was moving on my own pretty much for a while there. But you know, you move to a building like near Belle Isle, you know. I mean, yeah, sure, it was bad outside, but inside was a lot of fun. You had a whole building, you know. You could make music. You could do whatever you wanted to do. You could park your car inside. You know, downtown Detroit was just come the weekend, man, it was deserted. So, you know, so the people that opened up little strange clubs around the corner, awesome, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, there's a band there, cool. You know, it's an underground place, plays till 5 in the morning, super cool, you know, and you saw bands and you saw musicians, and just, you know, to this day, the same musicians I've seen then, I see now, you know. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So what made you stay in Detroit?
Well, you know, I was so tired of moving that I thought I'd never move again, because, I mean, I was just like, we will move every 2 years. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, that just really sucked. So Detroit became my home. So the fact that I, as a living, travel, is kind of ironic that I was like, I'm so sick of moving that I don't want to move again. But it was just endearing. It was like, it's kind of like where I belong, you know? Detroit didn't belong to anybody, and, you know, I didn't belong to anybody. And, you know what I mean? Detroit is kind of like an island, believe it or not, because you have to go off the freeway to come to Detroit. You know what I mean? Otherwise, you come straight, you know? You have to, like, go this way. Otherwise, you just, 90, you know what I mean? 75, you know. So Detroit was left alone for a long, long time. And Detroit just, it's a lot of fun. The people were always great. People were always great in Detroit, you know. There was not, you know, people didn't pretend that much in Detroit. There was nothing to pretend to, you know what I mean? I mean, I think now there might be some stuff, but, I mean, think about it. Like when you know, we would see Kid Rock downtown where nobody cared. It's like, and, you know, we don't care. You know, you see Eminem walking down, you know, even like when my name is in the middle of that, you know. I mean, you know, not to mention all the, not hip hop, but Carl Craig and all those guys. I'll think of the name of the type of the music. You know, the music fest. All those guys in the you know, the musical festival downtown.
The Jazz Fest?
Not the Jazz Fest. The other one. The Movement.
Oh, Movement. Yeah.
What do you call the music?
Movement.
Techno.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, all the techno guys are from here. Huge.
Right.
Huge.
Right.
But not here. Here was like, hey, what's up, dude? You know, at the grocery store. You know, or like you see them like drive. You know, like, oh, is that called Craig? Yes. You know. I mean, we're like, you know, you be in Europe and there's statues of them, you know? Like, I mean, seriously, you go to Amsterdam and it was nothing but techno. I mean, like, literally every place you went to was like, please stop playing this techno, you know? But in Detroit, you know, and this is like all the time, you know? I mean, where were they going to go to? And not only were the new ones, where were the old ones going to go to? So they're always clashing. Like, you go in a bar and you'll see, like, what's his name from blah, blah, blah to what's his name from blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and then you just... So it was always... Detroit's always been a good music. And so because of that, I've always been, you know, felt right at home in Detroit. I mean, I've often wondered, like, where I could go. And there's not many answers, you know. There's not many answers that, I mean, the fucked upness is kind of what. It's kind of what is cool about it, but that's a terrible thing to say, you know what I mean? Like we as I grow older, we know that we have to give it up. Like we can't, this can't stay fucked up, you know. It was fun for us when we were young, you know. I mean, the Fox Theater. Man, we could like you could just play in there. Like it wasn't rebuilt. It was, you know, so you could somebody would have a party or something and oh, let me slide down the lion. Wow. It's like, you know, just fun stuff,
yeah.
You know, nothing horrible. So but Detroit, the people are very very down to earth, you know. And not like, you know, straw chewing, you know, wow, come on down to our roots. No, just down to earth, just, you know, kind of like working stiff, kind of a working stiff kind of attitude. You know, there's not too much secret clubs and you know, rock royalty. I mean, there is rock royalty, but, you know, even rock royalty has to go eat at, like, say, Sinbad's. You know, or you know, because like, where else are you gonna go? You know, I mean, now you know, Detroit's having its food revolution. I think, I mean, restaurants are, my God, there's one new one, you know, almost every month. You know, but
So why do you think that that Detroit has been such a hotbed of musical talent?
You know, that's something they ask all the time. Before, yeah. I used to say was because, you know, winter would hit, and there was nothing to do, you know. I mean, winter would hit, and it's like now, you know, it's cold, there's nothing to do. And now there at least it's like, you know, we can go eat dinner. Before it was like Union Street. You want to go eat dinner? Let's go to Union Street. I mean, that was like, or Greek Town, or, you know. And now, you know, now you have like all these great restaurants, you know. But there was nothing to do. There was nothing to do. And basically you just went from people's houses to people's houses listening to records and drinking beer. I mean, you know, like anybody else would. And I mean, I think that's the same thing that happened in like Seattle, or, you know, that whole, you know, Olympia, where, you know, there's just nothing to do, you know. And I mean, Seattle, I guess is a lot, but in, you know, in Detroit, I don't know why. I you know, they say because of the car industry. I don't think so, you know. I think it's because of the weather. I mean, you know, I mean, look, how many good bands are in LA? None. Florida, zero. I mean, I'm willing to listen, but Florida, zero, you know, there might be one or two bands. Yeah, no, the Allman Brothers, whatever. But, you know, I mean, seriously, I think the weather has a lot to do with it. Hmm. I think, I don't know. I mean, you know, why do so many good bands come out of Memphis? You know, I think it's because it's so hot. You know, New Orleans, super hot. You know,
right, the opposite effect.
Exactly, the opposite effect, but still good music.
Yeah.
You know, Mississippi, hot, good music. You know, so, you know, but then you have to ask yourself, how come there's not good music coming out of Russia? Maybe there is. We just don't know. You know, it's like super cold and super ugly up there. So, but I mean, I don't know. Why do you like Detroit?
Why do I like Detroit? My family's always lived here.
Yeah, but I mean, have you ever gone somewhere else?
I for a few months lived in Florida, and I was moved right back.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Florida, all they have is a big sun that they show you. Like, look, it's winter. Here's the sun. And you go, oh, it's the sun. Thank you. What is the big thing in the sky? I love you. And then you're like, oh, God, please, I want to go home, you know. I mean, we used to go over in Europe. And we would tour, and we would come back, and we would all like get in Detroit and kiss the ground. Mm-hmm. I mean, and as fucked up as it was, you know, it's like we didn't know how good we have it. Like especially when it comes to music, I don't know. I mean, it might not be so good. Like if you're looking for a job, but as far as a musician and an artist goes, when you are in other cities. You think, like, you got the day off, and you're like, okay, let's go check out some bands. There are no bands. You know what I mean? And in Detroit, you don't realize how good you have it. Like you know, there's five or six bands you want to play with. There's five or six bands you want to watch. There's five or six art shows you want to go see. You know? There's, you know, five or six weird projects that somebody's doing somewhere behind a building that you're like, okay, you know? Then this is weird. And you're like, cool, you know? And, you know, so that's why I like Detroit. I mean, it nurtures that attitude, you know. Entertain me, Sonny. I don't know. I mean, I really don't know, but I find it hard to think of where else I would like to live, and a lot of it has to do with the music, you know.
So tell me more about the Detroit music community. Why is it so special here? What makes it different from other cities that have musicians?
I think for me the thing that makes it special for me is that there's all different kinds. There's so many different kinds, and they're all equally as good. You know, I mean, from techno, which I'm not particularly crazy about. You know, I've learned to like some better than others. But you know what I'm saying, though. From techno to they have a huge gospel, steel pedal gospel community. You know, to garage to, like, you know, we have there's a great band called Adult. And they're like electronic music, like kind of like not like techno, but like electronic, like German kind of electronic. Mm-hmm. That they're pretty big. I mean, there's a lot of bands that are pretty big from Detroit that are in all different kind of genres, you know. And you can't, you know, you got Eminem, you know, you got Jack White, and you got Kid Rock. All those three sell a lot of fucking records, and all those three are nothing like each other. Mm-hmm. You know, neither one of those became because of each other, you know. And that's not to mention, you know, you had Aaliyah. You remember when she died and crashed the plane? The school that she went to was by my house. And all the kids just pour out into the street. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. Like, they just, like, instantly just pour out of the school. Because she used to go to a school for the performing arts mm-hmm. before I moved to Ancas. And you know, I mean, think about it. Those are three major record sellers. Eminem, Kid Rock, and Jack White. The White Stripes. In the Seven Nation Army, they played it before every soccer match the last World Cup. Every soccer match, they were standing there, dun, 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 and I'm like, this is the coolest, because I'm really good friends with Meg, the drummer. I go, this is the coolest thing ever, man, because I was just getting, I really loved the last soccer, you know, World Cup, and yeah. I was really getting into it. Like, I didn't know nothing about nothing, but every time they came on, I'm like, this is so cool. I mean, you know, to Aretha Franklin, you know, to, I mean, it's so, that is what makes it so special, because there are so many different factions of it. It allows everybody to flourish, and if you don't like that one, you can make your own, and there'll be like 50 people behind you, like, I want to do that too, you know. And the more you have, the more the standards get better. You know what I mean? If you only have, because we have so many different kinds, we can get very. We can get very snobbish about it, like, I sing better. You know, or, yeah, you know what I mean? Because we can go, nah, but when you hit in your thing, you're hitting. You're hitting because you're hitting to rock, to funk, to garage, to pop, to, you know what I mean? You know, when a lot of people are coming to see you, it's because you're hitting, you're firing all their attention. You're hitting on all that. So you have a standard. So we have a standard in Detroit. That it's an unwritten standard, you know what I mean, and it's probably the coolest thing. I just realized that talking to you that's the coolest thing Detroit offers is a unwritten standard of a measure of how good you got to be. You know, there is an unwritten standard. I mean, yeah, people can blah blah blah, but they don't have to tolerate you because there's so much around. You know, and. And when you have a standard, you want to meet it. You want to meet it. You want somebody. You want to work up to saying, yeah, you know, I'm that good too. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not about talent. It's more about ideas. You know, Detroit has super talent and super ideas, but it has a standard. You gotta, you know, it's like there's a bunch of people. You know, it's great. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And I think that is what makes the Detroit community special, that it has so many different, it has a standard, and it has so many different, that's my answer. My final answer, it has a certain standard that people have to meet, mm-hmm. and it has so many different genres that try to meet it, you know, that it becomes just wonderful to be part of, wonderful to be in it, wonderful to like, you know, wonderful too when you see a band hit. Oh, you go home happy, you know. When you find a young band and you go, that was cool. That was cool. You know, it makes you want to go home and write, or makes you want to go home and pick up your guitar, you know. So it's a lot of there's a standard. There's so many genres trying to meet that standard, and it inspires you. Mm-hmm. It's a very inspirational community. On top of that.
That was a great answer. So yeah, thank okay. you. Yeah,
that was my final answer. Yes.
And how do you judge if someone's met that standard, or how do you know? How do you feel that?
Well, I have a girlfriend who says, and she's funny because she doesn't play anything, and she goes, I don't know nothing. She goes, Mary, do you see a smile on my face? Am I smiling? I go, no. She goes, I'm not smiling, am I? And then she does me the band play. She goes, see, I'm smiling. So to her, it's just like, you know, if it moves her. Mm-hmm. To me, how do I judge it? The attack and the intent. The attack and the intent. Like, you know, I don't know how to describe it. So if you're watching a band and you go, how, you know, you could tell if they mean it. You know, all those things. You could tell if you mean it. You could tell if you smile. You could tell if your foot's tapping. You could tell. But But you get that, you get that yeah inside of you, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know how you go on, you know, simple, it's simple, like how do you know, like somebody goes, well, how do you know what songs to do, you know? And we'll go, well, you know, it's like, you know, somebody, you buy a shirt, you know, or somebody gives you a shirt, and you go, yeah, I like it, but you don't wear it. Like these shoes, I had these shoes forever, okay? And then one day, I knew to put them on. Everybody goes, shoes are cool. I knew how to wear them. Mm-hmm. I knew why I wanted to wear them. Prior to that, they were just sitting there, you know? And so same thing, it's like, you know, how do you know when you're looking for a couch for your house, and you go, that's the couch I want. You just know. You know, it makes you go, yeah. You know, it makes you go, yeah. And when somebody has reached a standard, you're like smiling. That's what I said, my friend. Yeah. You are like smiling. You smile involuntarily. You know, you're like, even if, you know, you just start smiling, like, okay, you know, that was pretty cool. You know, or like, you know, you're sitting there and you're like, yeah, okay, that was cool. You know, you're satisfied. It's worth the time you spend out. It's worth the time you spend out. And I mind you, I have a lot of time. So for me, it's like, always be aware that people are spending their hard-earned money and their hard-earned time to come and see you. Mm-hmm. So don't get so caught up in your troubles. Even though you can be when you're a musician, you can get, you know, I have to tell the band, we're not in the van. They start having discussions among themselves. You forget that you're on stage because you do it every night.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, after a while, you just start disassociating yourself. But you got to be mindful of people's money and people's time. Mm-hmm. But probably the best answer is when you start smiling.
All right.
When you start smiling. And so that's why I brought up my friend.
Yeah.
Because it's true. When you start smiling, I want to start saying this, when you start smiling. You're at a bar and you start smiling, yeah.
All right. And we're out of time. Is there anything else you would like to add?
Oh, I'm sorry I took so much time.
No. It was amazing. Those are all
okay. Because, I mean, you had a lot of questions and I was like, I can talk forever. But you're right. From this, I got... it's a standard. We have a standard for many different genres. And when you hit it, people smile.
You know.
You really do. You really do. You know, it's like you just know, man. You know, like, how do you, when you're looking at other puppies and you pick that one, you know that's your puppy. You know, because I don't know how you know. You just know.
It's a feeling.
It's a feeling. But when it's a feeling. When you go see something that you really like, for whether it be, especially, you know what I love most is when I go see something I thought I was going to hate. I love when I get turned around.
You're surprised?
Yeah. Or I love it. What I love about music too is when I've hated an album for years and years, and then one day I listen to it and I'm like, wow. You know, because I'm so arrogant. Like, I cannot believe I hated this record all these years. I can't believe I hate it.
Kind of like your shoes.
Kind of like my shoes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Mary. I really appreciate it.
I'm sorry if I took too much of your time.
No, don't apologize.